Peak Wealth Management proudly presents Finding True Wealth with Nick Hopwood, where we believe by providing education and guidance, we help our clients make sound financial decisions, which ultimately puts them on a path towards their definition of true wealth. Now, here is your certified financial planner professional and founder of Peak Wealth Management, Nick Hopwood.
Welcome back to Finding True Wealth. It's been a couple of months. It's been a busy summer for my family and I. As you know, we have a new baby, Quinn. She's about 8 months old, and spent some nice quality time with her and the boys, who are 9 and 7. We purchased a travel trailer and took a week on a camping trip. Spent a week at the lake at my in-laws' place in Pinckney, Michigan. We went to Cedar Point, spent a long weekend up north. So we had a lot going on this summer, and now we're back in the saddle. And today I'm going to be speaking with my dear friend, Scott Westgate. I've known Scott for probably about 15 years, and he's been a really nice partner in the 401k/pension area for me, because it's such a complex area. And as a small business owner, there's so many different options, and the regulations are so... there's no better way to say it than just complicated. It's good to have someone like him who actually understands it and can speak in plain English about that topic. So Scott was worried, though, today because he's got a summer cold, and I actually, after re-listening to it, I think that he sounds better than normal. So I give him a little bit of a hard time with his calculator, but he has a huge calculator. So if you ever have a chance to meet with him, either at a Michigan football game or at his office, you know, ask him to show you his calculator. You'll be impressed. I bring up Michigan football because he is a huge fan, as am I, and we do a lot of tailgating together. And if you listen in the first minute, he has a shocking prediction for Michigan football coming up. And if you listen to the very end, if you can put up with both of us, Scott gives his tip for the best way for a small business owner to build wealth. So that's enough of a tease. I think I'll bring in Scott right now. Okay, Scott, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Nick. Glad to be here.
Well, today's going to be really exciting because we're going to be talking with the actuary type guy. I think he's got a place down in the basement with his calculator doing calculations with pensions and such. But I actually met Scott working on some plans together, and we figured out that we're both rabid Michigan fans. Right, Scott?
Love Michigan. Go blue.
Yeah, go blue. And we're here on the eve of the 2017 football season, so I thought maybe we can... put in a prediction. What do you see coming up for the season?
Nick, I think we're going to have about at least 11 wins. And I think you're going to see about a 31-10 blowout against Florida this Saturday.
Outstanding. I hope you're right. So, Scott, what exactly do you do? Okay, I gave you this image of the calculator, but what really does that...
Well, it's a good question, Nick, because I don't think my own family knows what I do. But really, basically, we're just an accounting firm that specializes in 401k and pension plans. So as far as actuaries go, we do need to get an enrolled actuary to sign off on our Schedule Bs for defined benefit plans. But other than that, we can handle all types of qualified plans, all the reporting requirements and the plan design requirements that the IRS and the Department of Labor require that most employers cannot handle themselves, so they farm that work out to firms like mine.
I can understand why no one would want to do that, knowing what I know. But I think most people listening, they have no idea what this kind of stuff means. So let's say I'm a small business owner, and maybe I just started, okay, and I'm doing pretty good. The economy is moving along. I found my niche. I'm making decent money. I want to start saving for my future. What are my options?
As a small employer, you have many options, and usually like I was at least, you're always looking for the least costly option. And those right now would be the simple IRA. That allows you to contribute to an IRA at levels that are higher than a normal IRA and avoid all the IRS paperwork and testing involved.
Right. So if I am contributing to a regular IRA or a Roth IRA, my limits are, you know, $5,500 or $6,500 per year. But if I want to do more than that, then I can get into this employer-sponsored area, such as a simple.
A simple would raise that ceiling by about two times, as long as you commit to a matching or a profit-sharing contribution of set levels to the non-owners that are in your company. And if that's just you, if you're just the sole owner, of course, that's a no-brainer. You would probably want to do that and avoid all the costs and complications of more complex plans, as long as the ceiling of $12,000 to $20,000 a year of tax-deferred money is good enough for you.
What if I wanted to put more away for the future and I was having a pretty good year? Then how can I get more into the retirement funds?
Well, that's where firms like mine then become more to the forefront. 401ks, I'm sure, is what everyone's heard of, and they are very valuable plans, the best way that I know of to save for retirement. But there are lots of rules and regulations involved with 401ks. And with small employers, those can really nip you in the bud sometimes if you're not aware of them, and you can get into a lot of trouble. So there's top-heavy tests, there's ADP, ACP tests, but then there's ways to get around those tests as well. And that's where we find a lot of our small employers going into the safe harbor 401ks, cross-tested profit-sharing plans. And then if they're really cash-rich, you're talking a new comparability and then maybe cash balance defined benefit plans.
All right, so let's back it up one step. And I'm thinking of a case that I ran into a few years ago where, you know, the owners wanted to provide a benefit for their staff and they wanted to save for their own retirement. But unfortunately, their employees were not interested in contributing to the 401 for whatever reason. Maybe they were uneducated about it or didn't see the value, or maybe they just felt like they couldn't afford it at the time. And as a result of the main rank and file staff not putting money in, it meant that the owners couldn't put much in either, and it was really frustrating for everybody.
Well,
why is that?
Because there's things called the top heavy test, where we have a client right now that's going through it. That's the test that's usually not as well known as the ADP test. The top heavy test basically says that if more than 60% of plan assets belong to the key employees, in general, that's the owner employees, then the company has to put in a 3% of pay profit sharing contribution to the rest of the non-key employees. And that's something the employer normally hasn't saved for or planned for. And it usually catches them off guard too, because that calculation isn't done to the end of the plan year. And when do you do those calculations at the end of the plan year? Into March or April of the following year. And then you're telling the owner, by the way, your plan's top heavy, you're going to have to put in a profit sharing you didn't know about. And you're going to have to put in a profit sharing for the next year too, because you're 4 months into a new year and you were already putting money in as the owner for yourself in the new year as well. So we get a lot of disgruntled employers. That's why we try to stay in the forefront and notify our plan sponsors if they're getting close to the top heavy level of 60%.
And you mentioned the ADP test as well. And I think correct me if I'm wrong, when you fail that test, it means that even other employees have to get money sent back to them that they put in. So imagine, you know, you put in your 10% and then the next year they say, sorry, you couldn't put that much in. You get a check in the mail.
Yeah, well, the IRS has made it a little more friendly in those regards, Nick. Because they used to have to file their tax return from the prior year amended because they received a contribution that was made in the prior year in the next year. But the IRS made those rules a little bit easier now. Now they're making you only claim that income the year you receive it, not the year you contributed to the plan. But
still, you can't put, you know, you're trying to save money for your retirement and then
correct.
They make you take it out.
We have to divide the highly compensated employees from the non-highly compensated employees.
What's that level?
And
today?
In general, it's anyone who made more than $120,000 in compensation in the prior year.
Okay.
Or anyone who owns more than 5% of the company, regardless what they make, and their kids and parents.
Okay.
Of the owners. So we take that group, compare it to the other group, and in general, the contribution rate on average cannot exceed 2 percentage points. So for example, if the non-highly paid group is at 5%, which is a good participation rate, by the way, the highly paid group can at most be at 7%, which usually doesn't get the high paid group up to the levels where they can save.
Yeah, because they might want to be saving up to $18,000 or $24,000.
Correct.
Yeah.
So there are ways that we can get around that, and that's where the Safe Harbor 401k design has come to the fore. Has become very popular because if you put in a safe harbor design, you not only satisfy that ADP test, but you also satisfy the top heavy test. So it's a really good method to allow small employers the ability to save what they want to save as key employees and, you know, make a commitment to your employees that you're in it for the long run, where we value your employment, and because of that, we're going to either give you a matching contribution or we're going to give you a profit-sharing contribution. And they're pretty rich, but most employers think that these strategies are well worth it. The matching strategy is a dollar for dollar on the first 3% of pay that an employee puts in, and 50 cents on the next 2%. And that has to be fully vested. There's no vesting schedule on that money. The across-the-board method, if you don't want to do a match, if you want to be paternalistic and protect all your eligible employees, if you just give a 3% of pay contribution across the board, fully vested to all eligibles, then again, you'll automatically satisfy those discrimination and top-heavy tests.
So basically, in order to ensure that I can put in the limit of $18,000 or $24,000
right.
as the owner, mm-hmm. I need to either match the enrolled people, 4% essentially, or everyone, whether they are in the plan or not, 3%. It seems to me like I'd rather give a match rather than giving money to people who are not even putting in on their own.
In most cases, that's mm-hmm. true. But I brought up a term earlier called the cross-tested or new comparability. See, all 401k plans, Nick, have to be housed in a profit-sharing plan. That's just semantics, but that's the truth. And if you have a profit-sharing plan, you can give even more money than a match. You can give a profit-sharing on top of it. So in many cases, the owners are usually older than your non-owners.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
And by using actuarial principles, the government says that the older your person is, the more money those people can receive in a retirement plan than younger people.
Sort of like following that catch-up philosophy.
Exactly like okay. that. And it's not discriminatory. So the maximum a person can receive in a defined contribution plan is $60,000 for 2017. So if you're getting the $24,000 as a 401k deferral, because assuming you're age 50, and let's say you get another 4% of pay as a match, let's say that's $10,000.
Okay.
That gets you up to $34,000, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Real quick. Well, I still have $26,000 I can give myself in a profit sharing from the employer. So an employer may give himself another $26,000 as a profit sharing and may only have to give 5% of pay to the rank and file or non-highly paid, and that could be proven non-discriminatory in some cases. So that would say, well, maybe I shouldn't give the match in a safe harbor. Maybe I should just give the 3% across the board. And then I only have to give 2% more to give everyone up to 5%, and then I can get my $60,000,
okay.
and everybody's happy. So that's kind of complex.
You call this the triple stack match, right?
No, that one is not the triple stack match. That one's just a comparability.
I just really wanted to say triple stack
yeah,
match.
I'd like it too.
Well, since I brought it up, I guess, how does that one work? And why would it make sense for certain small business owner?
Well, remember I said in most cases the owners are the older people, and therefore I can prove actuarially that 5% of pay to the rest of the people and $60,000 to the owners will fly in a non-discriminatory fashion. Well, what if your owners are young, like you, Nick, youngster? Your employees...
I've got plenty of gray hair, okay?
Your employees, I think, are in general older than you.
Yes.
So I couldn't put in a new comparability plan for you, like I just described.
Okay.
For someone like you, maybe a triple stack match would work better. So in order for employees to get anything out of the plan, they'd have to put their own skin in the game. They'd have to put their own 401k dollars in. Because a triple stack match implies you're only putting money in for them if they're putting their own money in. Hence,
yeah,
matching.
Match.
Right. So the IRS gives us ways where we can automatically pass all these discrimination tests, i.e. the safe harbor, 401k.
Yep.
And then it says you can do two more layers of match on top of the safe harbor match, as long as it doesn't exceed certain limits, and I could get the key employees up to $60,000 in most cases based on their compensation, and maybe give nothing away to everyone else, because if they don't put their own dollar in the plan, they don't get a match.
Oh, okay.
But what normally happens when the employees see, you know, they're getting dollar for dollar in the first 4% that they put in, oh, and maybe they're getting another 66 cents on the next 6% they put away. Oh, and on top of that, the triple stack may be getting another 8% of pay. They usually put their own pay in.
I would, as their advisor, I would recommend that they join the plan.
Well, that's why the law says all you have to do on these safe harbor plans is provide a 30-day notice at the beginning of the year. You don't have to promote it. You don't have to say anything. Yeah. You just have to give them a notice. How many people read things?
If it comes in the email, it's not getting read. If it is mixed into some other papers, it's probably not getting read either. But you know, it's certainly something that they should be reading.
It should
and
be.
And they should be taking advantage of it.
And most employers aren't that way.
Yeah.
Very few. But you have some that may be that way when they think the match is going to cost them a big nickel.
Right.
But that's another way the younger employer, key employee, can get the full $60,000 in and maybe hardly put any away for any of their employees, because it's all based on a matching contribution.
You know, whether there's a lot of participation or not, whether it's a young owner or an older owner, I bet there's a lot of people that have a simple IRA just because that's what they started a long time ago, where they could really maximize their efforts for themselves and for their staff by consulting and understanding, by consulting with someone like you and understanding, hey, there's some of these more strategic options out there.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because just yesterday I got an email from April. April's in Lansing and had a couple of employees, and we were going to put in a 401k plan for her. She already had a solo 401k, but since she's at an employee, she wanted to put in a triple stack match kind of scenario. But when you know, like employees do, sometimes they leave you unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. Now she's back to just a solo K, and she said she didn't need a 401k. Full-blown 401k anymore, but she's not happy with the service she's getting for her current provider, a very reputable accounting pension consulting firm, and she liked what we'd had to discuss, like you and I are talking about right now. She knows what's available. She knows what can be done, and this was never explained to her before, and she wants me now to start doing her work for her, even though it's a solo 401k with Fidelity.
Now, a lot of these solo K plans, a lot of people just sign what they call a prototype document, and you know, they keep it really simple without using an administrator, right?
Correct.
So what's the difference?
Well, April, you know, didn't know she could put up to $60,000 of her own money in the plan. She thought she could only put in, you know, $18,000 or $24,000.
There you go. Sounds like she's not working with a very good advisor either.
Correct, Nick.
Because he or she could have told April that the limit's much higher with a solo. But it just is a testament to how confusing this whole area is. You know, most advisors don't get into this business, this area of the business, because it's very technical. And I remember probably 15 years ago working with you in a case when you were educating me about these things, and I couldn't believe these rules and regulations, and they've only probably gotten worse. But what I like about you, Scott, is that I don't have to memorize this stuff anymore, because I can just call you and you're always available. So I appreciate that.
Thank you, Nick.
Okay, but okay, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and like, if we were talking about Dave or any of our joint clients, you know, you bring to the table the investment expertise at low cost that they're not going to find anywhere else. And then knowing to delegate to another expert when you don't know the answers, you know, there's something about doing that that provides synergy to working with you, and I hope working with me as well.
Yeah, I like to consider myself the financial quarterback.
That's
the Heisman, the 2017 Heisman hopeful financial quarterback.
I agree. You know, my firm struggles with who is our client. You know, is it the financial advisor? Because that's how we get all our businesses referred in from financial advisors. Is it the plan sponsor? Or is it the participant? And we really, all three of these entities are our clients.
Yeah.
And there's not really a 1A, 1B, ones. They're all ones. So it's a tricky fine line in how to juggle all that.
Yeah.
But we hope we're doing a good enough job to do that.
Of course. Of course you are. And then we didn't talk anything about defined benefit plans. So the pension plan, you know, I like to talk about it with my Income 360 discussions. Hey, the pension plans, they don't exist anymore, right, for the next generation. But with small business, there still is opportunity, right, with a robust business, with good profits, for them to set up a defined benefit pension plan. Tell me about how that works.
Nick, in the private industries, they're becoming more and more prevalent.
Really?
More and more. Because employers can maximize their accrued benefits using, remember the new comparability techniques we were talking about before? Techniques like that to really put in a robust contribution for the key employees, but they're also required to guarantee a contribution to all employees at a certain level, which is usually at a 5% of pay rate. Plus, those plans are not subject to investment risk. The employer has to make up for any investment losses that the plan may incur, and that gives the employee a greater comfort, knowing they're going to get a fixed contribution and get a fixed interest rate, and it's guaranteed by the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, which is a government entity. So they're becoming more and more popular for small employers.
So we know those are all the benefits for the employee, right? And I agree with all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But that means the employer or the owner, right? He or she is putting in a lot more, right?
Well, the reason for that, in most cases, is because there's a much higher tax deduction ceiling, and there's a much higher annual addition limit. Remember $60,000 I used as the limit for an age 50 person in a defined contribution plan?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have a small steel company on the east side of town where the owner, who is in his 60s, is getting about $250,000 annual addition, quote unquote. It's not called that in a defined benefit plan, but that's really what it is. And only having to provide about 3 or 4% of pay to the rest of the employees, because actuarially we can prove that's non-discriminatory, and plus we're guaranteeing a retirement benefit to the rank and file.
Wow. So I think, wouldn't you know, at the time when we are cutting our podcast at the Peak World headquarters here, they decided to mow the lawn right outside my window. But let me just repeat what you said. Correct me if I'm wrong. The guy that you just mentioned, the steel company, he can put in $250,000 into his quote-unquote pension fund each year, and the only other requirement is to put in 3 or 4% of the employee's pay for their share of the deposit.
That's correct.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. But one of these plans have to be in place for at least 5 years.
Okay, so you can't just have one good year.
It cannot be a tax sham.
Set up a pension fund, put in the 250, and then be done.
It's meant to be a permanent plan.
Okay.
And 5 years usually is proof enough to the IRS that that'll fly.
Gotcha. Wow. I mean, what a great solution for someone who is having a lot of success and they want to take care of their people and they need that tax benefit. It seems like a really great way to go.
And especially if that guy has been pouring all his profits back into the business and really never saved for retirement.
Yeah, a lot of times that's the case for small business.
That's why I bring it up.
Yeah. Outstanding. So for the new guys, the young people, the young companies, we have the solo Ks, the simples, the SEPs. For when we start growing with staff members, we have the 401Ks, which have problems. So we add in the safe harbors. Mm-hmm. We can execute strategies like the triple stack match. And if we really want to put it away, we can explore the defined benefit plans and really build some true wealth.
Well said.
Anything else that we're missing here?
Well, all of these things have fees accompanied with them.
Sure.
There's plan document design fees, and then there's annual administration fees. The pension plans cost a little more because it requires a little more effort, a little more expertise.
You need a bigger calculator for that one.
Yep. And the way you fund these animals, you know, there's always the distributions require 1099s and things like that. And if you fund them, by yourselves with individual brokerage accounts, then you have to also do 1099s by yourselves, and that's a big, big hassle. So most of these arrangements are funded by 401k platforms that are knowledgeable on how to do all the tax reporting, and that's usually the best way to go, I think.
Okay. Well, I'm sold. So when I set up my 401, we're using a simple IRA, but maybe I'm one of those people that I described where one of these solutions can be crafted to maximize the benefits for everyone.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, Scott, thank
everyone
you.
Everyone wins.
Yeah. Thank you for your time today. I really appreciate you sharing your thoughts. I know that there's a lot of people that can benefit from this type of work that you do, and they are completely unaware of it. So trying to get the message out.
And if any of you are ever at the Michigan game, Section 4, Row 63, that's right where I sit every Saturday.
Yeah, and
look forward to seeing you.
I've been in Scott's seats a few times, and he has those cushions.
Yes, they bring, love the cushions.
They bring out the cushions before the game, so you don't have to carry them with you. You walk in, they're already there.
It's wonderful.
Yes. Scott also has a great tailgate spot, too, so.
Don't let that out.
Yeah, okay. It's a secret. Sorry. All right, thanks again, Scott.
You're welcome, Nick. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Scott. A lot of great info from Scott. If you want to learn more, of course, you can go to peakwm.com, or you can go to Scott's website directly. And by the way, his company is called MBC Retirement Services. MBC ultimately standing for Michigan Benefit Consulting, but it's michiganbenefit.net. Once again, michiganbenefit.net.
You've been listening to the Peak Financial Minute with Nick Hopwood. You can subscribe to this podcast through iTunes and the Android Marketplace or by visiting www.peakwm.com. Peak Wealth Management is your premier wealth management partner. Plan, protect, peak. Securities offered through Regulus Advisors, LLC. Member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Peak Wealth Management, LLC, a State of Michigan registered investment advisor. Peak Wealth Management, LLC is independent of Regulus Advisors.